1700 AM.
Join AGA for its National Leadership Conference, February 17th and 18th at the Ronald Reagan Building and International Trade Center. AGA will bring together government, financial, management, and accountability leaders to share valuable insight, proven strategies, lessons learned. Sessions over current issues relating to the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, the effects of political transitions, and what the future holds. Show your commitment to a more accountable future. Register today at agacgfm.org/NLC.
Newsmakers on the Federal Drive with Tom Tamman and Amy Morris, weekday mornings 6 to 10.
Defense Contract Audit Agency Director Patrick Fitzgerald.
In 1990, we had one employee for every $19 million of procurement funds. At the start of 2010, we have one employee for $49 million of procurement funds. We have brought on about 500 auditors over the last 2 years to address this formidable workload that we have.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive.
This is a paid commercial program and may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars. Join NITP this morning for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Good morning and welcome to For Your Benefit on this fine Valentine's Day, February 14th, 2011. We're here to talk about showing your love by protecting your loved ones. And who better to lead that than Art Stein, a certified financial planner with SPC Financial in Rockville, Maryland, fellow seminar presenter, and be all know all of finance, land, long-term care. Good morning, Art.
Thanks, Bob.
Good to see you again. And John Elliott, senior benefit strategist, guest co-host, ex-Fed. Did I say seminar presenter?
No, you didn't.
Well, I should have said that. Anyway, good morning, John.
Good morning, Bob. Good morning, Art.
And good morning, John. My name is Bob Lines. I'm an accountant type with NITP as well. And Art, how do we show our love or our appreciation by doing things financial?
Well, you know, it's Valentine's Day, and, you know, everyone makes an effort to show their love for their loved ones by buying cards and chocolate and flowers. And if anyone cares, chocolate is what you want to send to me. And but there's another way to do that, is to make sure your loved ones, you know, your spouse and your kids are protected if something happens to you, especially if you earn the majority of the money in your family. Or you expect to have, you know, the largest pension, the largest annuity. And there are a variety of ways you can do that. And, of course, one is to make sure that there's an emergency fund, that you have the right amount of life and disability and long-term care insurance. Also, you know, look at your homeowners and your auto insurance. You want to make sure that you're investing the appropriate amount. You want to make sure that your investments and other aspects of your financial life are, you know, simple enough or plain enough for someone else to be able to step in and handle them. Of course, for feds, the decision about how you handle the spousal annuity is really a key decision. And finally, you want to make sure that you don't have any debt. Now, none of this is very romantic. As a matter of fact, it's not romantic at all. But taking care of your loved ones is really a better way to show your love than just buying flowers.
Hey, Art, not everybody's married, so loved ones can be relatives, they can be somebody you live with, etc. But what if one isn't so receptive? What if the one that's concerned about this doesn't have a clue about finance and the other one has a better one or vice versa? How do you communicate that?
Well, you know, that's an important issue in a marriage, you know, and it's not just how you communicate that, but how you communicate lots of other things. And certainly I see in my clients as a financial planner, you know, I have spouses where, you know, one spouse makes all the financial decision, but the other spouse is very well informed. Then I see where one spouse is making all the financial decisions and the other spouse is scared as hell because they don't know what's going on. They're worried about the decisions that are being made. And you know, I sometimes feel that when people come in and ask for a retirement plan or some kind of financial plan, that sometimes one of the reasons can be that one spouse wants to do it because he or she doesn't know what's going on, and they don't know if the decisions are being made correctly, and they feel like having a financial planner involved will reveal things and be a check on the decision-making.
This could go for domestic partners as well, I'm sure, but what about somebody that isn't married but wants to take care of a relative? How do they bring them into the fold, the relative? I mean, sometimes you don't want to tell because you might want to change your mind later when they don't visit you when you get old.
Yeah, I know that. There are lots of ways to take care of relatives. And, of course, you know, Bob, sometimes the relative you want to take care of is older than you, and sometimes they might be like kids or, you know, nieces or nephews or something like that. So that's something that we help people with a lot. But, you know, you can make them, of course, a beneficiary on your TSP account. You can make them, when you get an annuity, your annuity doesn't have to be a spousal annuity. You can choose someone other than a spouse. And life insurance, of course, taking care of your own personal needs, making sure that you're protected, maximizes the amount of money that you can leave to somebody. Of course, you want to make sure that you have a will and powers of attorney. Because if you don't do that, your money's going to go according to what the state says and not what you want it. And, you know, let's face it, people who have partners instead of spouses have a unique set of problems that they need, you know, to deal with. Wills become much more important. Beneficiary forms become much more important. Powers of attorney become much more important.
And do you find in your practice that sometimes folks don't want to face doing a will because that means they're planning their death?
I find that many people don't want to face doing a will, and I'm surprised at how often there are lawyers who don't have wills.
And accountants.
Accountants never file their taxes. Lawyers don't have wills. Financial planners don't do financial plans for themselves. But here's the thing. I mean, people often say to me, well, you know, I don't need a will because I have a very simple financial situation, and you know, it's just all going to go here or there. The problem with that is this: one, it may not be so simple, but if you don't, more importantly, I think perhaps more importantly, if you don't have a will, it means you don't have a power of attorney. And suppose something happens to you, you're still alive, you had an accident, and you can no longer make decisions for yourself. If you don't have a power of attorney, healthcare power of attorney saying this person can make health decisions for you, and a what's called a springing power of attorney saying that this person can make financial decisions for you, I mean, then who is empowered to make financial, you know, financial and health decisions for you? That can be a real disaster. And if you haven't done a living will saying, you know, if I'm in a vegetative state, I either want to be kept alive or I don't want to be kept alive, then you force your relatives and your friends to make this horrible decision without any indication from you as to what you would want. And, you know, even if you have a living will and say, you know, listen, if I'm in a vegetative state, just cut me off, I want to die, that's a tough decision for them to make. But if you've given them no indication, I mean, it's a terrible thing to do to people, and it's a terrible thing to do to yourself.
Can you write the will? Assuming you can, but you can will correct me if I'm wrong. You could say, well, if I'm in a vegetative state, pull the plug, but only if I'm 70 or over or something like that.
Oh, I'm sure you could. I mean, I'm not a lawyer, but I'm sure they could write it any way they want.
Yeah, I would think.
All righty. Now, we're live. It's about 10:15. It's February 14th, 2011, and we'll be live for another 35 minutes or so. So give us a call if you like, 202-465-3080, 202-465-3080. If you're calling after that time, don't call us. because we won't be here. But you can email us, and I'll give you the email address in a little bit. Too many numbers all at once is too much. So 202-465-3080. But you will have an opportunity to email us afterwards, and I'll give you that in a few. So, Art, there's a lot of buzz now with long-term care. We got a long-term care open season. Is it open yet?
No, April 4th, the federal long-term care program starts, and it runs through June 24th. And all that means is you can use that to use the abbreviated form, 7 questions versus the normal 40. But it isn't for retirees, just employees. So it's coming up. Starting April 4th, you can buy long-term care insurance with less hassle. And speaking of things people don't like to talk about, they don't like to talk about that either.
Yeah, they don't like to talk about long-term care because, you know, you're talking about needing help bathing and dressing and maybe going to the bathroom or having Alzheimer's, needing someone to take care of you. Unfortunately, you may not want to think about it, but your risk factor is very high. According to the federal government, about 70% of the people who reach age 65 are going to need some form of long-term care before they die. About 40% of the people receiving long-term care are below the age of 65. So Christopher Reeves, you know, this actor who broke his back in Middleburg, I mean, he needed 24-hour-a-day long-term care for 9 straight years. You know, they spent over $1 million. And you know, I know of people who've needed long-term care for 20, 30 years. It's very expensive. The average cost in the D.C. area for a nursing home is over $90,000 a year, and that's the average. Of course, care at home, most people, I'd say everybody, prefers to get care at home or in an assisted living facility instead of a nursing home. Assisted living facilities are typically less expensive, but you know, if your need for care reaches a certain point, becomes too high, then they're going to have to send you to a nursing home. Care at home could be less expensive or more expensive depending upon how much care you need and how much you just plain want to stay at home. So, you know, the options for people who care about that, and everybody should, for federal employees and retirees, they have a choice. They can get a long-term care insurance policy through the Federal Group Long-Term Care Insurance Program, FLTCIP, or they can get an individual policy. Now, the Federal Group policy has improved a lot in the last year. It's basically as good as the individual policies sold directly to you by insurance companies or through financial planners or agents. It doesn't have some of the key choices, though. However, what people are going to find is, depending upon their personal situation, the federal group policy may be cheaper than individual policies. It may be more expensive. And so that's a key determination when buying a policy, and I would urge everybody to compare the cost of the federal policy to the cost of an individual policy for their particular situation. Now, the open season that's going to start in April, on April 4th, long-term care insurance is not like health insurance and FEGLI, the federal government life insurance program. With long-term care insurance, you can buy the federal group policy, if you're eligible, from whenever you want, 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Doesn't matter if you're retired or not retired. The program is also open to what are called qualified relatives, which means spouses, domestic partners, and adult children. And for employees but not retirees, qualified relatives also includes parents, parents-in-law, and step-parents. They can all buy the federal group policy even if the employee or retiree does not buy it. So that could perhaps be a nice benefit for them. Now, what's going on in this open season is that employees and their spouses and domestic partners and same-sex domestic partners, let me say, can buy the federal policy with what's called abbreviated underwriting, which means that all these policies you have to medically qualify for. If you don't qualify medically, they're not going to give it to you. During the open season, current employees and their spouses and same-sex domestic partners can apply and get a policy with a greatly reduced number of questions asked, and in many cases without them getting your health records or doing a telephone interview. So people who have medical conditions that might prevent them from getting a policy normally can use this open season, if they qualify, to perhaps get a policy.
Yeah, because if you were turned down for the Fed's plan, this is what you're saying is this upcoming open season is an opportunity to maybe squeak in there.
Yeah. Now, not everybody is going to qualify even, you know, if they do the abbreviated underwriting. I mean, you're not going to get a policy even during the open season, if there's any indication of Alzheimer's, ALS, MS, muscular dystrophy, Parkinson's, schizophrenia, multiple strokes, or transient ischemic attacks. Even during the open season, they're not going to let you get a policy. If you already need help with an activity of daily living, the open season's not going to do you any good. And if you use various types of medical equipment like a stair lift, walker, wheelchair, you're not going to be able to apply. Now, spouses have a few additional questions, but not many. The additional questions for spouses are, do you need help with what are called instrumental activities of daily living, which include things like, do you need help preparing meals, shopping, making decisions about your money? I always like these because my wife always says, well, hey, you need help with all of those right now, you know. But that's not really what we're speaking about. But it can be a real opportunity for certain people. And the type of people who it can be a real opportunity for is someone who has, for instance, severe diabetes, severely overweight, HIV positive, has cancer or recently had cancer. These are all conditions that would prevent you from getting an individual policy, or who would prevent a current employee from getting a policy, but should not be an issue during the open season. However, let me just add one other note. The application and the questions on the application, we know what they are now, but they may be different during the open season. I mean, and I got some information from the people, Long-Term Care Partners, which runs the federal long-term care program. They said we may see some changes in the application form. They didn't say if that was definite. They didn't say if it would make it harder or easier to get a policy. But that's just something that we need to keep in mind. And let me also add that these abbreviated underwriting is always available to new employees and their spouses as long as they apply within 60 days of becoming an employee.
Yeah, you talked about comparing, which is what I did when long-term federal plan was first offered in 2002. And what you can do, and what I guess I did, is I went to the LTCFeds.com website where they have a calculator. Tailored a plan I thought would work for me, and it spit out what my monthly premium would be. Then I took that to an independent agent who sold, and it was long-term care insurance, so she could sell me any company's plan. And I did get a comparable plan for less. I mean, I think at the time it was $35 a month less, and actually they had a six-year plan. And I got the 5% inflation protection, and I think we went for $125 a day. I argued strenuously with my wife that we could get by with $100 based on the fact that we're both CSRS pensioners. But it paid to shop, and ironically, it was the same company that underwrites the federal plan that ended up being so. And when, after 7 years, when the feds were, you know, moaning about the premium increases, mine did go up as well, but not as much as the Fed plan. So you can do better. Not always, as you pointed out. It depends. The agent that sold me my plan was also, you know, she's an expert in Alzheimer's disease. Her mother has it and is so forth and so on. And she said, for example, that at the time, this may be dated, that if you have diabetes, you'll get long-term care insurance. And the federal plan is cheaper in that case.
Yeah, well, it depends, because, you know, diabetes is one of those conditions where you may just get the standard health rating with an individual plan, because perhaps it's type 2 diabetes, you're not taking any insulin, there have been no other problems. Or maybe it's type 1 diabetes, it's very severe, you have neuropathy and other problems as a result. And, you know, during the open season, someone like that could get the federal plan, but probably couldn't get the federal plan outside of the open season. So, you know, this is the opportunity. And, of course, same-sex domestic partners, up until last year, were not eligible to apply for the federal long-term care insurance policy, the same-sex domestic partner of an employee or retiree. Now they are. But up until this open season, they did not get the abbreviated underwriting available to spouses. They had to do full underwriting. So this is a big change. And as far as we know right now, after the open season, it will go back to the same situation for same-sex domestic partners, i.e. they'll have to go through full underwriting. Now, I know that there is a possibility that might be changed, but why take a chance? Go ahead and apply now and get what you need.
Here's a good global question that actually Mike Causey handed us this morning, and it's from a gentleman, and he says, with all the data, has anyone within your organization researched the optimum break-even point as to when to purchase long-term care? In other words, statistically, at what age is it best monetarily without purchasing it too soon? Currently, I'm a 50-year-old male and in reasonably good health. Should I purchase now while the monthly payment premium is going to be lower than what it will be when I age? Is there a break-even point?
Absolutely, there's a break-even point. And all you have to know is, when are you going to need the long-term care? And if you know that, you can calculate the best time to buy it, not based upon any cash flow analysis, not based upon the time value of money, but just based upon, well, hey, I know I'm going to need long-term care at 62, so I'll buy it at 61. If you don't know that, and of course we don't know that, then the best time to buy long-term care is now. If you postpone it, one, you might need it. You could have an accident, you could have an illness and need long-term care. You could develop a condition that would prevent you from getting a long-term care policy. You could develop a health situation that greatly raised the cost of the policy. And what I would suggest to everyone is, although, you know, as I said before, about 40% of the people need long-term care below the age of 65, clearly your chances of needing it increase as you age. You know, that's also true of life insurance. You know, people die at all kinds of ages, but our chances of dying increase as we age. But no one sits around and says, well, gee, how long should I postpone buying life insurance? Because you have the risk now. And, you know, if you die at 25, that may be statistically very unusual, but financially it has, you know, 100% of the effect on your family. So there's no way to do that kind of an analysis with long-term care insurance. But I will tell you this, that the longer you wait to purchase, the more you'll pay in premiums over your lifetime.
Is there any age at which it almost gets prohibitively expensive? Life insurance is like that.
Sure.
As you age, it just, the premiums.
You know, I hardly ever have anybody in their 70s and 80s buy a policy, you know. People are interested, but it's just so expensive. Let me tell you, you know, 50 is a great age to buy. Lots of people are buying in the 40s. the average age of people I sell long-term care policies to is about 54.
Hmm.
And the people who buy early get a much better deal, especially if you get a policy, you know, as John mentioned, with a 5% compound inflation adjustment, because then the benefit's going to go up 5% a year without any resulting increase in premium, and you're protected.
Okay, then another email came in, actually, to the show, and it's an email to you, Art. And the person says, can the long-term care partners, if you will, increase the premium for current long-term care enrollees during the life of the contract? One, that's, and I believe this contract runs through December 31st, 2017. I guess the heart of it is, can they? Well, I guess,
yeah,
I'm sure that they can. But,
the premium can be increased two different ways. And one is that Long-Term Care Partners, which is this private group that runs the program, has a right to raise premiums for any group who are using so many more benefits than they expected that they're losing money on them. The second thing is that premiums can be raised or decreased or anytime OPM agrees to let Long-Term Care Partners do it. I mean, the only contract, excuse me, is between Long-Term Care Partners and OPM, and they can change it if they want to.
Sure. Which we saw last year.
Yeah.
But for 7 years, the premiums stayed the same.
And I think people, I guess it's easy for me to say they get over exercised about increases in the premium, not that they should welcome it with open arms, but it's a fact of life.
Yeah, and look at the increases they get every single year in their health insurance premiums. I mean, long-term care has done very well for the people who bought policies.
Let me ask you something just globally outside of this. I think I've read where some large insurance companies want to get out of the long-term care market. Am I reading the wrong stuff?
No, you're not reading. You know, this has definitely happened. Some major carriers, very large insurance companies, and as a matter of fact, major sellers of long-term care insurance have decided to get out of the market. Now, let me say that the people bought policies from them don't have any worries because, again, one of the nice things about the individual long-term care insurance policies, so once you get one, you have a binding legal contract with the insurance company that they can never change without your permission. So even if they get out of the business of selling new policies, they still have to honor your policy. But we have seen some companies drop out, and I'm not surprised. I always thought that we would see major consolidation in the industry. And, you know, if you're familiar with what happened to disability insurance, if you go back 20 years, there are a lot more companies selling disability insurance. The policies were a lot cheaper. The benefits were much more generous. The policies were easier to get. Now, there are very few companies that sell individual disability insurance. Policies are more expensive. Benefits aren't as good. And we're seeing the same thing in long-term care insurance. There were a lot of consolidations, fewer companies selling the policies, higher premiums for people buying new policies, and although we have not seen a reduction in benefits.
Let's take a look at disability insurance.
Okay.
It doesn't really have anything to do with long-term care, I don't think. It's kind of sort of, but disability is you can't perform your job. And when should somebody look at that? Should somebody look at that?
Well, disability insurance, you clearly want to look at as early as possible. And, you know, in your 20s. Federal government has a group disability, has group disability coverage for its employees. A lot of the employees don't even know it because it's free. They, you know, they don't see it on their pay statement, any withdrawal. And it's great that you have this free benefit, but the problem with it is for FERS employees, if you're disabled and cannot do your job, what they're going to do is replace a percentage of your income. And that percentage is 60% for 1 year only. And then after that, they're going to replace 40% of your high three, I guess, for the rest of your life.
Well, at 62, they reconfigure it as if you worked a 62.
Okay. And, you know, most of us cannot live on 40% of our income. I mean, it would be disastrous. And so the solution to that is to get what's called supplemental disability insurance. This is an individual policy you apply for individually, pay for yourself, and it pays in addition to your federal group benefits. And it would be a lifesaver for people that needed it.
But they're all not created equal. Correct me if I'm wrong. I don't know your world. As I understand it, some have a wait period of 60 days. Some have a wait period of 6 months. And the longer you wait, the lesser the premium, if I'm not mistaken. And
basically, Bob, those are, you know, whenever you buy a policy, these are all choices you get to make. You can get a policy that says it'll pay benefits after you've been disabled for 30 days. You get one that said it will only pay benefits after you've been disabled for 365 days. All these things affect the premium. And, of course, for federal employees, you know, they want to take into account, you know, well, the fact that the first 12 months they would get 60% of their high three. They might have, built up sick leave and things like that. So, you know, there are various ways you can reduce the premiums, and they should be looked at. And the same thing's true of long-term care insurance. And, you know, as John said, when he bought his long-term care insurance policies, he thought of it in the terms of, well, my wife and I are both CSRS retirees, I guess. So we have these pensions, and we're supplementing pensions. You know, if you're say FERS, your pension and Social Security payments are not as high. Your FERS annuity doesn't have a full cost of living adjustment. And maybe your spouse, you know, wasn't a Fed and he or she is only going to get Social Security. So it would at that point make long-term care insurance. You would want to be looking at higher amounts. With disability insurance, you know, there are all these decisions you can make too, and that's a good thing.
Is there another dynamic, too, with disability insurance as to what the definition of disability is? Can you do your job? And if you can do your job, maybe you're not going to get it. Or can you do half your job? Or can you do any job? I think I've seen or worked with somebody, and they said, well, you know, maybe I can't do my job, but the policy won't pay if I could be a Walmart greeter, pump gas. You know, I could do anything to earn income, and then the benefit would be less if they could do anything.
Yeah, you do need to look at what's called the definition of disability. And, you know, with some of the individual policies, they're going to say if you cannot do your job, even if you're working at another job, you would get your disability payment. So that's like a really generous definition. With the federal policy, it's stricter, and I don't remember the exact language. I don't know if you do, John, but something job.
It's very similar. Yeah, I mean, if you can't perform useful and efficient service, that's the term of art OPM uses, in your current job only, they'll put you on the disability annuity rolls and you get the monthly payment for as long as you need it, maybe indefinitely if you never recover. Now, under the federal rules, you can go to work, say in the private sector, and earn up to 80% of your former pay indexed to inflation. Strange but true.
And still get your disability.
And without any reduction in disability. Now, if you get 80% or over, then they cut you off. They deem you recovered finally. But, of course, when you become disabled, you don't know that you're going to be able to do anything. Now, if you can't do anything, probably, correct me if I'm wrong, you're probably going to also qualify for Social Security disability. They have a much tougher standard than the OPM. So that would, the second year and beyond, yeah, they offset your FERS disability by 60% of the Social Security payment, but your net income increases if you qualify for both. So if you can't go out and do some work to pad that disability income, chances are good that you'd probably qualify for Social Security disability as well in that case.
Yeah,
which may not be enough, but I imagine still isn't enough, where you probably still would want to be looking at disability insurance.
I bought disability insurance a long time ago. I can't wait till I hit 65 so I won't have to pay the premium anymore. Because, you know, it's gradually gone up.
I'm right there with you.
It's gradually gone up over a long time, but it was one of these policies that basically I would get it even if I could pump gas at the time that was pumping gas. They had that, however that was. And I like that because the other ones, through some professional societies, were a lot more limiting.
See, we're so old that we remember when people were paid to pump our gas and we didn't do it ourselves.
Now they call it full service, right?
Yeah.
Whatever that is. So, all righty. Thanks. That's insight on disability insurance. Now, life insurance, we could probably spend 3 days on, but I guess you got to march through somebody in their 20s, somebody in their mid-30s, somebody in mid-40s. We can't do all that. But what does somebody need to look at? Because to me, I'm always surprised when somebody comes in. I think $500,000 is enough. And I go, no, it's not, unless you figure your whole family's not going to live more than 5 years. We get college education, if they have kids and the like. How do you work with a client? Let's say no kids, single. Why do they need life insurance, and what do they need?
Well, you know, if someone has no kids and they're single, they may not need life insurance, or at least not very much. And you know, if there's no one else in their life that they care to benefit or who would be dependent upon them financially, I mean, their need for life insurance is much less. Then you go to the other extreme. You know, one spouse is working, the other spouse is taking care of the four kids, and they're in their early 30s. They would need a lot of life insurance on the spouse that's working because there are these three or four or five people completely dependent financially on them. And even if the non-working spouse, you know, thinks that he or she might go back to work if the, you know, working spouse died. Sorry, once your spouse died, you're not going back to work for a while, especially if you have kids to take care of and everyone's dealing with the emotional fallout. Most people don't have enough life insurance. And, you know, with the federal government, you can get basically up to 5 times your salary. And for someone who has a wife or a husband who's taking care of kids at home, that's really not enough. You know, it's 5 years of income. Well, that's not going to go very far if you die. And the other thing I have to say is that for healthy people, Fegley is not cheap, you know, because everybody can get Fegley and it makes it expensive for healthy people to have.
I'm perfect example. When I was approaching 50, I had, of course, the basic and 5 times option B. So I had essentially 6 times my salary. I saw what the premium increase for Part B was going to be at age 50. And so I immediately called an insurance company where I'd had some small whole life policies and such and got much cheaper term insurance. That's what Fegley is. It's term insurance. You don't get any cash value build up. You die somebody, your beneficiary gets paid, basically. So I got a much cheaper policy, saved a lot of money switching from Fegley to private, so-called. Now, I had to take a physical, but I got a free physical out of it, too. They came to my house, and I don't think they were there very long, you know, and took the basic signs. And, of course, I passed, or I wouldn't have gotten it. And so, yeah, you have to be in reasonably good health to get it. But if you are, then, yeah, you can save a lot of money, and I'm proof of that.
Art, years ago, I mirrored John's situation. I chose early 50s. And I thought, oh, I'm going to be retired at 60. So I bought, and I had really great health then. I think I have pretty good health now. And so I bought a 10-year level premium and from a mutual friend of ours and very analytical friend and kind of said, you should go look at 20 or, and I go, nah, 10. I'm going to be a fat cat at 10. Well, I'm not a fat cat at 10. So then I had to go out in the market again and get the sticker shock, but If that's anything to pass along to an individual looking at it, if you can wrap term up for a long period of time, do it. You can always cancel the policy.
I mean, I deal with people all the time who are getting insurance from me, and it's like they don't want to spend an extra $10 or $15 or $20 or $30 or $50 a month, whatever it is, to get 20-year term instead of 10 or 30-year term instead of 20. And then they come back, and it's like, you know, I still need insurance. What's it going to cost me? And, you know, in some cases they can't get a policy. But if they can, it's just, at that point, so much more expensive. You need to lock it in. And, you know, it's unfortunate, but people buy insurance, and I'm talking all types of insurance, including auto and homeowners, based upon price. And it's not how we buy almost anything else in our lives. I mean, when I go to buy a TV, I don't get the biggest, most expensive, and I don't get the smallest, cheapest. I get something in between, and I do it by looking not just at the cost of, you know, 46 and 42 and 50-inch TVs and the slightly better picture on this one, but looking at the benefits, you know, what size, how good a picture. And I come to some kind of decision based upon, you know, I just do it in my own mind, but a cost-benefit analysis. With insurance, people just buy it on cost. You know, I mean, when you – whole life insurance is a great product for certain people, but it's universally criticized because it's expensive. And you'll read all these articles saying, don't buy it, it's expensive. Well, that's only looking at the price. It's not looking at any of the benefits. And it's the same thing like with 20 and 30-year term as opposed to 10. Why would you pay more? Well, because you're getting, you know, two or three times the length of coverage on a policy you can always cancel if you want to. And it's certainly worthwhile. Same thing on long-term care insurance. You know, it's like we had this question. This person wants to postpone payment to save a few bucks. And one, when you do the analysis, you pay more if you postpone because of the difference in premium. And two, you put yourself at risk. You might need the coverage.
Okay, yeah, but I've read I read an article years ago on the business section of the Post, probably, where it said that having some whole life, in other words, you can explain it better than I, that builds up a cash value, while it shouldn't be your total investment strategy, could usefully be part of your investment strategy.
Absolutely. That I would never call it an investment, but I would say to you that whole life builds up what's called a cash value, which can be used while you're alive, can be spent on anything you want, can be withdrawn from the policy without paying any taxes if you do it in a correct manner. And when you actually do a very sophisticated analysis of cost-benefit analysis, you will see that putting money in whole life compared to, say, putting it into the TSP, you end up, it can be shown that, you know, in normal circumstances, you end up with about the same amount of money to spend during retirement, but the person with a whole life also has the death benefit still, which is worth a lot of money.
I'm insurance challenged, and our mutual friend every year. I don't understand this, and that was a good explanation. This person provides a good explanation as well. But for those listening, whole life and term are totally different as far as
and very different expenses.
Very different expenses, but they sound kind of the same. Whole life. Well, of course, it's whole life. It's life insurance. Well, term and whole life. Totally different in your explanation that the whole life has a financial planning component to it as well as the economic benefit if somebody passes.
Exactly. I mean, whole life is one of the most flexible financial instruments, maybe the most flexible. You can use it many different ways, including providing income during retirement. You can sell the policy if you reach a certain age. And, you know, like if you're above the age of, say, 65, lots of people will buy whole life policies from you. So it's another way to generate money while you're alive. Can you be used as collateral for a loan? It just, there's so many things you can do with it. And, you know, if you pay the premiums, you're going to reach a point in a good whole life policy. This is certainly not guaranteed, but most people find they reach a point where they don't have to pay the premiums anymore because they build up such a large cash value that they can just pay the premiums out of the cash value instead of, you know, writing a check to put in the policy.
Yeah, I've got some policies where that's occurred. I mean, I think, and my wife, I think she stops paying on a substantial amount of insurance in her mid-60s.
Exactly.
So, yeah, there's a lot of flexibility. You mentioned borrowing against it. I borrowed against my whole life to build a porch a number of years ago. I didn't have to pay it back. Of course, I would have lost the death benefit. I did pay it back rather quickly. But at the time, the interest rates were better than I could have gotten elsewhere. So it worked for me in that way as well. And I still have the porch.
Okay. What a deal. Yes.
What a deal.
So if we step back and look at whole life, I've read some of them could be used even for long-term care, the cash value.
Yeah. Whole life insurance can be used for long-term care in several ways. One, most of the newer policies say, you know, policies that you're buying today have a rider, which in most cases you don't pay for, that says you can spend down part of the death benefit if you need long-term care. And you can always take out the cash value, of course, to spend on long-term care. Then there are policies that are sold specifically, you know, for people who want long-term care insurance but don't like the idea of paying premiums into a policy where if they don't need long-term care, they're not going to get the premiums back. Now, I don't understand that because that's the way term insurance and auto and homeowners work too. I mean, you don't get money back if you don't use the policy, but some people are bothered by that. So you can purchase a whole life policy that will pay long-term care benefits beyond the death benefit of the policy. But of course, you pay extra for that. It's a rider. You have to medically qualify for that. I think for most people, the most efficient way, financially efficient way to get long-term care is just to buy a regular long-term care insurance policy.
Well, this is a lot of stuff. This should generate some emails. So we're getting too late to call, but you can call for another 6 minutes.
And you know, Bob, if people want to call me with further questions, my phone number is 240-221-8106.
Can you do that again?
I can. 240-221-8106.
Now, how about those of us that are telephone challenged? Is there an email address?
Yes. Email is astein, A-S-T-E-I-N, and that's at spcfinancial.com. And SPC is, you know, Sam Peter Charlie, spcfinancial.com.
Astein.
Astein.
I guess A stands for Art?
It does indeed.
Okay, so, and if you want to email us for something off of Art's expertise, we're at 4FOR, your Y-O-U-R, benefit, at NITPINC.com. For your benefit, at NITPINC.com. You can do it 24/7. And again, Art should... was kind enough to come on the show, so he could he should get the first shot. But if it's non-financial, if you will, if it's benefits, which is John's expertise, and tax, which is mine, please do. All righty, Art. We've covered now long-term care, life insurance, disability insurance, and investing for the long and short term. That's another whole show, but we got all 5 minutes.
It's a show and a half, Bob, but long-term investments are different than short-term investments. I mean, short-term investments, typically money that you think you're going to need to spend in the next 4, 5, 6 years. Things like the G fund and the TSP, savings accounts, money market funds, CDs are great for that type of need because they're not going to fluctuate in value. And you don't expect them to have a high rate of return, but that's okay because you're going to need the money pretty quickly. Money that you're going to need 10, 20, 30 years from now. And remember, even if you retire at 60 or 65, you have to think about the money you're going to need from your investments in 20 or 30 years. that's a long-term investment, and that's a very different situation. I mean, historically, equities, stocks, over long periods of time have outperformed bonds, savings accounts, money market funds.
And real estate.
And real estate, definitely residential real estate. Now, past performance, no guarantee of future performance. Certainly in the last 10 years, been terrible 10 years for stocks. But the problem, you know, as a result of the bad last 10 years, lots of people have been putting money in bonds and savings accounts and money market funds. In the TSP, that would be the G fund and the F fund. And the problem with that is if we have any kind of positive inflation rate, over time, the purchasing power, after you take into account taxes and inflation, the purchasing power of those types of investments is not going to keep up. And it's a huge problem. You know, many retirees, either because they're into the life cycle funds or because they're just get conservative when they retire, switch, you know, sometimes all of their money into these very conservative investments and don't realize, because they don't really see it, that the purchasing power of the funds is declining over time. So you need to treat your long-term investments differently. And, you know, emotionally, that's very hard for people because they get very upset when the stock market fluctuates down. And for people like that, I mean, maybe you do need a financial planner, to someone to manage your investments.
I think so. And the other thing about bonds is interest rates could potentially go up. They're a lot more skittish in value than what stocks would be. They're hyper sensitive to increases in inflation. The value now, the interest rate will.
If interest rates go up, the value of existing bonds is going to go down, which means the value of the F fund and the TSP would go down. And, you know, depending upon how much interest rates go up, they could go down a lot, a very significant amount. And it's certainly possible, considering everything that's going on, that interest rates could go up a lot.
Okay, with that happy note, we have about 45 seconds. Final comments, Art?
The happy note is federal employees and retirees have the best retirement plan around. Between your annuity and your health insurance, you should be able to have a very happy retirement.
John?
Don't forget about long-term care open season starting April 4th. A lot of you should be buying it.
Okay, thanks, Art. Great comments.
Thank you, Bob.
And thanks for you all listening. Next week, Karen Schaefer will come in. She'll be focused on financial planning and, like Art, be a powerful show. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. The show can also be heard 24/7 on federalnewsradio.com. Thanks for listening.
HCMF Federal Recruitment and Talent Management Strategy Day is a one-day training conference to be held Wednesday, May 4th, 2011 in Washington, D.C. The conference will focus on new opportunities for bringing in top talent to the federal government, such as marketing and brand strategies, investing in employee development.